One of his most cited examples of artistic liberty winning out over honest representation is in his painting The Execution of Lady Jane Grey. Decisions were made in this painting that created a more dramatic feeling, and here, as in many of his other works, he was guilty of basing his paintings on superstitions and urban legends rather than careful research into the truth. In this execution scene, a young blindfolded woman in a kind of dungeon interior space and on a platform is being guided to an execution block. It is important to know that this is a painting that depicts the beheading of Lady Jane Grey. But what is the story really? We may know Lady Grey as a flavor variation of Earl Grey tea, but Lady Grey was an actually real person. She was an English noblewoman and was put to death for treason in the 1500s. She's also known as the 9-Day Queen of England. She was the cousin of the 15-year-old King of England, King Edward VI. As the young king lay dying, he declared Lady Jane Grey his successor and new Queen of England, because he knew his half-sisters, Mary and Elizabeth, were scheming for the throne. One, a Roman Catholic, wanted the throne to take the now Protestant country back to the Catholic faith, and both were illegitimate children of King Edward's father. Edward knew that Lady Jane Grey, a year older than himself, was considered to be one of the best educated women in the country, was a devoted Protestant, and was a woman who would lead his country in a way he would appreciate. Lady Grey was declared de facto queen, but the sisters kept their scheming up, and Mary used popular opinion to help her secure her own desires. With the popular voice seeming to side with Mary, the council decided to crown Mary and arrest Jane for treason. First her husband, and then she, was executed. She was barely 17. Look at the painting. We might ask, where's the lie? In this case, this is often the way it's in the details that reveal the truth of things. While the French traditionally used raised platforms to stage executions of noble persons, especially during and after the French Revolution, the British did not. They used the bare grass of the Tower Green outside the Tower of London. As well, the French would perform beheadings in indoor spaces like dungeons, but the British tended to do it outside and in the open, obviously, as they preferred that specific grassy space for executions. However, there may be some truth to the depiction of Lady Jane Grey groping with her hand for the block and being guided by another. This is an event that is said to have occurred after she blindfolded herself and then cried out in panic, unable to find the block. However, even with its truthful elements, this historical painting is not a depiction of reality. It is a retelling of a historical story. Realism never shows history as it is believed to have happened. Realism depicted the present moment as it was observed to be. The Royal Academy supported the age-old belief that art should be instructive, morally uplifting, refined, inspired by the classical tradition, a good reflection of the national culture, and above all, about beauty. But trying to keep young 19th century artists' eyes on the past had become an issue. The world was changing rapidly, and some artists wanted their work to be about their contemporary environment, about themselves and their own perceptions of life. In short, they believed that the modern era deserved to have a modern art. The modern era begins with the Industrial Revolution in the late 18th century. Clothing, food, heat, light, and sanitation are a few of the basic areas of modernization in the 19th century. Transportation was faster, getting things done easier, shopping in the new department stores became an adventure, and people developed a sense of leisure time. Thus, the entertainment business grew. In Paris, the city was transformed from a medieval warren of streets into a grand urban center with wide boulevards, parks, shopping districts, and multi-class dwellings. So that the division of class might be from floor to floor, the rich on the lower floors and the poor on the upper floors in one building instead of by neighborhood. Therefore, modern life was about social mixing, social mobility, frequent journeys from the city to the country and back, and a generally faster pace which had accelerated ever since. How could painting and sculptures about classical gods and biblical stories relate to a population enchanted with progress? In the middle of the 19th century, the young artist decided it couldn't and it shouldn't. In 1863, the young poet and art critic Charles Baudelaire published an essay titled The Painter of Modern Life, which declared that the artist must be of his or her own time. By the early 1800s, the Academy was fully re-established as the center of the mainstream art world in France. However, they began to recognize that their obsessive focus on neoclassicism to the exclusion of all new art genres was starting to damage their reputation as the purveyors and trainers of the best and most innovative artists, and so they began to shake things up a bit. But keep in mind, they were an institution built on now-hallowed traditions, so their shakeup was subtle. Basically, landscape painting was moved up the hierarchy, and a special category in the yearly art show was created specifically for landscape painters. This might have been a radical move if it wasn't for the fact that the Academy had done this to shore up interest in neoclassical styles. The new category was paysage historique, historical landscape, and made landscape eligible for consideration for the Prix de Rome awards given to the artists of the best painting in a genre category in the show. The prize came complete with a gold medal with a paid stay in Rome at the French Academy there. As the most prestigious award the Academy could give out, the creation of the Paysage Historique category created a new competition field, and young artists flocked to the Louvre to look at Dutch and Flemish landscapes. The Dutch and Flemish had been into landscape centuries before the Parisian art scene gave them any serious thought, and to learn about this previously undervalued genre of painting. It also meant that viewers flocked to the Salon to see the newly created landscapes. By 1835, landscape painting made up over a quarter of the art displayed in the Salon. Suddenly, landscapes were cool and everyone was talking about them. Historical landscape as an academy genre paved the way for interesting developments in the art world. As landscape painting took the Salon walls by storm, pun intended, the focus was including historical elements that had remained necessary. And as artists began to become more and more skilled at rendering the landscape in pleasing ways and became more and more influenced by the Dutch, Flemish, and British landscape artists, the paysage historique began to slowly give way to another kind of landscape, the landscape of the present day, without much or any historical significance. Neoclassicism may have been the clinging goal for the Academy to change its mind about landscape painting, but it may have actually been the final nail in the coffin of the aging art style completely.